The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Now, how would you feel if you had a child who wanted to be of the other gender, a boy who wanted to be a girl who wanted to be a boy, who wanted to transition, as it is now known? Would you agree to that? Would you agree to providing them with the medication and drugs to stop puberty, to assist in their transition in the teenage years? Well, Stella O'Malley recently made a documentary for Channel 4 television called Trans Kids, It's Time to Talk. You've met Stella on this programme on a number of occasions. She's written a number of books on parenting, such as Bullyproof Kids and Cotton Wool Kids. She is a psychotherapist as well as being a writer, and she joins us now. Stella, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi there.
Now, you had a particular personal interest in focusing on this area. Tell us about your own childhood, please.
When I was a child, as far back as I can go remember, so kind of like I'd say three, I wanted to be a boy, and it was very intense. It was a very severe experience. It lasted many, many years. I was way beyond being a tomboy, insofar as I was quite disparaging of tomboys in the area because I thought I was the real thing. It was horrible, you know. I didn't enjoy it. It was very difficult. I was an unhappy kid anyway. And I often think, did I focus everything upon that? I don't know. I do know it lasted a very long time. And I found it incredibly difficult to come out of it, to emerge from it.
Okay, was it that you felt like that you were a boy trapped in a girl's body and then everyone was treating you as a girl and that you disliked that?
Certainly, after quite quickly, people were allowing me to be a boy. I presented as a boy. I wore boys' clothes and I acted like a boy. And I grew up in Blanchardstown in the 1980s. I was born in 1974, and I was haunted by the question, "Are you a boy or a girl?" Everywhere I went, and I'd always look them in the eye quite intimidatingly and say, "A boy." And so
And what name did you go by? I mean, your name.
I went by Stella, but Stella is a weird name. Certainly was then, and I had, in some bizarre way, decided that could be masculine. Which I know, kids are funny. You know, the crazy leaps we make can be kind of hard to believe at the time. But yeah, I went by Stella, and I wore boys' clothes, and you know, I was the only kid in the school who wore trousers, insofar as there was girls and boys in school and they all wore the uniform. And I wore the top of the uniform, as in I wore the jumper and the shirt, but I wouldn't wear the skirt. And this is a time when no girls were wearing trousers, you know, in the
school
uniform.
Anyway.
Yeah, nobody was. But I just wore my ordinary jeans.
And how were you treated then by the teachers and by the other pupils?
It's interesting. So different to now, you know. I was just accepted as that intense, crazy, mixed up kid. You know what I mean?
Were you called names as a result of it?
No, I was a very assertive kid. I probably would have been more likely to be calling anybody a name if they had. I was, you know, a fighter. I was intense and I was intimidating. And I'd say I was quite scary. And I was allowed to be whoever I wanted to be. It was a very different time. People didn't talk about things. Certainly didn't. Nobody was taking me aside to explore my feelings or to point out to me, by the way, you're a girl and you're presenting as a boy here. Or, you know, there's huge kind of disconnects that were just disregarded. And for good or for bad, I don't know how I would have taken it had somebody taken me up on it. I've no idea.
But I know
nobody did.
And before I get to your family, but the teachers, did the teachers treat you as a boy or a girl? What happened when
Stella.
I went to sports, for example?
I suppose perhaps it wasn't such a genderized society. You know what I mean? Certainly, I was a girl. Yeah, I wasn't, if you're asking me, I wasn't in the boys' races for the community games. I was in the girls'. So, you know, if you're asking, was I divided, the acknowledgement was, you know, I was a girl. But it wasn't emphasised the way I think it is now, insofar as I presented as a boy. Nobody particularly emphasised the fact that I was a girl. But at the same time, there was reason, insofar as I wasn't. I remember going into the boys' changing rooms in the swimming pool and they kind of looked the other way. You know what I mean? And yet, you know, things like that. I don't know. It was just, if I was to say anything, it was looked the other way.
Okay, what about your parents and your family? How do they treat you? Do they see you as Stella the girl or Stella the boy?
Well, I presume they saw me as Stella the girl, but they allowed me to be that very intense kid who said she was a boy. You know what I mean? It wasn't in a time of discussion. You just didn't speak about things like that. And I just said, I'm a boy. And I just went my way.
Until what age, Stella? At what age did you suddenly start finishing thinking that and suddenly thinking, actually, I'm a girl, I'm a young woman?
It's funny, I'm 44 now, and I've never spoken so much about my childhood since this film has come out. So I'm trying to get it right. Somewhere around puberty happened, and puberty was a train wreck for me. It was really, really disturbing, and it was a real feeling of, up until then, I felt I was controlling things. I was telling people I was a boy, and they were accepting it without, you know, pushing back on me. And then puberty pushed back. Puberty kicked in, and it was awful. It was harrowing. It was really disturbing. And yet I remember feeling, this is so much bigger than me. I do remember feeling, oh my God, I have no option here. I have no option. You know, the girl that I am is kicking back here, and I've nothing here. I've no cards to play here. And it was horrible. I went internal, I went very quiet. It was a really disturbing experience. So I'd say from about 10 to 13, maybe 10 to 12, I don't know, 9 till 12, I was trying to pull off a plaster. I didn't know where I was at this point, and went very quiet about the whole thing. Everybody at this stage kind of associated me with being a boy, a very intense kid, but they weren't going on about it. People are, you know, more absorbed with their own things. So I was just, like I say, that kind of crazy mixed up kid that wasn't a huge amount of emphasis on it. And then I would say I moved from what would now perhaps be termed gender dysphoria. I'd say I'd moved from that maybe at around 12 or so into just, you know, self-loathing and, you know, just a disconnection with my body and a rejection of my body. I'd say I'd moved beyond the actual emphasis on the gender into a general self-loathing, which also lasted many years. I'd say I was 16 before I'd kind of come together with myself, that I was who I was, that I had a perfectly lovely body, and that I was adjoined with myself, aligned with myself.
Is that why you became a psychotherapist?
A few people have asked me that. I went on to have some very extraordinary other experiences. So yeah, many, many reasons I became a psychotherapist.
Okay. And you're happy now that you didn't have the opportunity, are you, to have changed gender before puberty, as is becoming increasingly common in Britain and indeed sometimes in Ireland?
Yeah, I am. I'm not talking for anybody else, but I am. I'm very happy that I went on to become a woman that is perfectly happy with their gender dysphoria, presuming that that's what I had, and certainly very happy with their gender. And I went on to marry and to have children, and I'm very glad. I'm very happy with the life I've had.
But can you imagine if you had been born, whatever, 25, 30 years later, would you have put your parents under pressure, or do you think would they have come under pressure to allow you to transition, to have the drugs that would have stopped puberty and to allow you to have physically as well as mentally become a boy?
I do think that would have happened. I think I was very assertive, and I think, you know, the computer has so much information out there, and I think I would have been that kid that would have got on the computer, that would have accessed the information, that would have found out about the concept of puberty blockers and would have, without a doubt, because the height of my distress was the beginning of puberty, which is when puberty blockers are prescribed, if they're prescribed. And I think that would have been when I would have absolutely insisted upon going down that medical route.
You've looked at the stories of those who are doing it or have done it in that documentary you made for Channel 4 called Trans Kids, It's Time to Talk. What did you find?
It was fascinating. I met a whole range of different people. You know, we met, let's say, for example, Debbie, who transitioned in middle age, and she would have had these feelings and she pushed them away. She married, she was born a man, she married, had children, and then eventually transitioned to a woman in her 40s and is glad she has. And so you kind of think, wow, that was a very difficult life, but that's not ideal. And part of me is thinking, I wonder, is there a recommended, a preferred age that people should transition if they do transition? And then I met different people, like, for example, Kenny and Cole, and they both had what sounds very similar to myself, which was they seemed to reject the gender that they were in. They were very uncomfortable. They played games of the opposite gender. They dressed in the opposite gender. And both Cole and Kenny started transitioning they took puberty blockers and they started transitioning at a young age. Kenny was very interesting insofar as Kenny at 14 started taking hormone treatment. And at 14, Kenny believed that he was a girl and he was born, transitioned to a boy, and he's now a boy, he's now a man, he's 25. And he's very glad about his journey. But at 14, I feel he was sold a kind of inappropriate story insofar as at 14, he thought he was transitioning and everything would happen and that it wouldn't take very long and it would be a complete process. And then as the months dragged on to years, he realised this is a very, very long, arduous, complicated process and the medication never stops. It lasts till the day you die. He wasn't really aware of that, and he had a mastectomy, and then he hasn't gone for bottom surgery, and nor have the vast majority of people who transition. They don't go for bottom genital surgery because it's so not great surgery. It's not very functional, or else it's not very aesthetic. It's one or the other. It certainly doesn't seem very fit for purpose. He didn't know until he was 21 that he wasn't going to go for genital surgery. He always presumed he would. And then in the end, when he found out the actual physical reality of it, he hasn't gone for it, and nor have the majority. So that was surprising to me. Now, having said that, Kenny is perfectly happy and very glad that he has transitioned and lives very happily as a man. But I do think, wow, children making decisions that will have a permanent effect, like permanent effect on their fertility for the rest of their life, permanent effect on their sexual functioning. These are children making very big, what I would argue, are adult decisions.
Yeah.
And that concerned me as the film... as we started to make the whole film process, the person I identified most with was Kale by a long shot. I've actually become very good friends with Kale, and we meet regularly. And she was very like me. She presented as a boy as a kid, was very unhappy as a kid, very lonely and very intense. And she did get on. She was born 20 years old later than me. And she did get on the internet, and she did find out about transitioning, and she did find out about how she needed to take certain drug treatments. She took them. She had a mastectomy at 19, and then in her mid-20s, the gender dysphoria left her, as it left me. When the feelings left, they never came back. I didn't have any lingering feelings, and nor has Kale. And suddenly she didn't have gender dysphoria. She didn't really care anymore about whether she was a boy or a girl. And so she detransitioned because the medicalization of her body, the relentless injections, it became, as she said herself, I became so, so tired. And so she detransitioned back, but she's been left with permanent changes to her body. And I, of all of the people I interviewed, she was the person I most identified with.
The title of your documentary does strike me as a very obvious one. It's time to talk, to have this discussion. But I believe that you have been attacked by many people who feel that this is not a discussion that you should be involved in because you haven't transitioned.
Yeah, that has been very strongly pointed out to me, mostly on Twitter, but by various different people, that I don't have any voice in this debate because I am not transgender. I personally think that everybody has a voice in every debate, so long as they're respectful and inquiring and ready to be told that they're completely wrong, which I am. I think it's appropriate to ask questions. All I wanted to do was make sure that we weren't doing any harm to kids, that make sure that none of this 2,500% rise in England and 2,100% rise in Ireland of children being referred for gender treatment services, that none of that huge rise could be children like me, children who were disturbed and mixed up, but who didn't need medical intervention to make their lives better.
It's very different to your previous books, isn't it? Cotton Wool Kids and Bullyproof Kids.
Is it? Is it?
Or isn't it?
Cotton Wool Kids is very strong about how, medicalizing children's lives and giving children maybe an overemphasis on their emotions might sometimes lead them a wrong direction. And Bullyproof Kids is very much about empowering yourself by delving within and looking for the strength within. And funnily enough, I have a new book coming out, and it won't be just about children, it's about everybody, but it's called Fragile: Why Are We Feeling More Overwhelmed and Anxious Than Ever Before? And again, I'm saying kind of the same thing, which is, you know what, no matter what you're faced with in life, generally I would say, we have a lot of strength within. We can face down an awful lot of things. We need support, and we need a lot of support. But often, ultimately, if you really want to kind of get through these hard times, you kind of have to tap into something deep within yourself and be in control of your own ship, be the captain of your own ship. Hard words, but I think the most empowering words you could give anybody.
Stella O'Malley, thank you very much for taking the time to join us here on The Last Word on Today FM.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.